Good afternoon, everyone. I will call to order this meeting of the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The first order of business, as always, is to call the roll. Ms. Niedernhofer.
Liebling.
Present.
Hewitt.
Present.
Schumacher.
Schumacher, present.
Ackland.
Present.
Backer.
Backer, present.
Bonner. Bonner.
Present.
Bierman.
Present.
Present.
Bonner, present. Bierman, present. Bolden.
Present.
Damoth.
Present.
Freiberg.
Present.
Grinhagen.
Present.
Keel. Keel. Morrison.
Morrison, present.
Munson.
Present.
Pryor.
Present.
Quam.
Present.
Ryer.
Present.
Schultz. Schultz. Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, present.
A quorum is present.
All right, thank you. And I saw that Representative Schultz is here as well, and Representative Keel, I see, is trying to get logged in with her audio. So we'll make note that they're present as well. Thank you, everybody. Representative Quam, would you like to move approval of the minutes of April 6th?
Yes, Madam Chair, I would so move.
All right, thank you, Representative Quam. Is there any discussion to the minutes? All right, seeing no discussion, all in favor of approval of the minutes of April 6th, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes are approved. Thank you. Okay, today we are doing the final markup of our omnibus bill here in committee. And so I am once again going to move House File 2128 to be recommended to be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And we have also the DE amendment, the DE1 to House File 2128 before us. And so that is what we will be working on, amendments to that today. So I think with that, we can get started on the amendments. And the very first amendment is, as always, is the author's amendment. So I'm going to move the author's amendment, the A12. And I will kind of give you a brief overview of what's in there, because the author's amendment to an omnibus bill is always a collection of a lot of things, mainly technical, and that is certainly true of this one. But so article, there were corrections and changes kind of throughout the bill. So in Article 1, I would characterize all of these changes as technical changes. A lot of them came from DHS, and as people read over and over the bills, they find things that just are technically out of line and need to be fixed. And that is what I think you will find in the author's amendment in Article 1. Similarly, in Article 2, which is the licensing and background studies, this is mostly technical changes as well. I would just call out on Section 2.16 of the, line 2.16 of the author's amendment. We're changing the, this is in Representative Ryer's bill, the MDH Rural Health Advisory Committee. We're changing the term oral health professional back to the term dentist. I know that's important for some folks. The rest of what's in that article is technical, I would characterize it as. In the Article 5, which is the prescription drug article of the bill, we have some other technical clarification, but the one thing I would just flag for you is some further work that was done by Representative Akam on her provision that's in the bill. If you recall, she had a provision requiring there to be an item packaged in with pharmaceuticals so that the consumer can tell if there have been temperature swings that might have an impact on the medication. She has worked with the department, with the Board of Pharmacy, and there's some further clarification language in there to make that work a little bit better, to have them work on that and update it. So that is in this amendment. Then under the Article 7, the telehealth article, there are a number of, technical updates, but a few of them, I'm sure that those who are really interested in the telehealth will be examining this closely. I was going to ask Representative Morrison, who is the author of the telehealth provision, whether she wants to comment on any of the changes that are in this section of the author's amendment. Representative Morrison?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I wasn't as prepared to talk about the changes as much as to talk about all the wonderful things that we did include in the Minnesota Telehealth Act. But we had to make a few changes for fiscal reasons. And I should probably defer to you, Madam Chair, particularly the A-12, I believe, or the A-10.
Okay. That's fine, Representative Morrison, and there'll be time later to talk about the bill as a whole, but this is, I just wanted to see if you had anything you wanted to comment about what's in the technical updates and changes. I would just, the only thing that I would flag for folks as being what I think would be kind of a notable change would be on line 3.12 to 3.13 of the amendment, which is requiring opioid treatment meetings that are related to high medication doses to be conducted using interactive video and visual communication rather than phone. I think that's a notable change. But other than that, I would characterize the changes as mainly technical. And then finally, in the author's amendment, in the appropriations article, if members will recall, this article pertains both to Representative Schultz's bill and to the bill before this committee. So I will just flag a few things I think are important for you to note that are changes in the author's amendment. One is adding a rider for $3 million each fiscal year for the Commissioner of Human Services to reimburse counties for the cost of treatment in children's residential facilities. So this is this might more pertain to Representative Schultz's bill. We're adding an appropriation of $100,000 in fiscal year 2023 for the Comprehensive Advanced Life Support Education Program. This is Representative Hewitt's bill. And there are some technical issues. We are adding a rider appropriating $650,000 in fiscal 2022 for grants to regional EMS programs that had been omitted originally from the bill. And that, again, is Representative Hewitt's provision. And then there's adding an appropriation that had been left off that pertains to the drug price gouging bill, which is some small attorney general costs related to investigating and being able to carry out the purposes of that bill. So those are the changes in the author's amendment. Are there any questions or comments to the author's amendment? All right, not seeing any. So not seeing any discussion, so I would move then that we adopt the A-12 author's amendment. All in favor of adoption of the A-12, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the A-12 is adopted. And members, you've been sent an updated spreadsheet that incorporates the changes in the A-12, so everyone should have that. All right, moving right along, the next amendment that we have is the A6-1 amendment. And I, Representative Ryer, did you want to move the A6-1?
Yes, so moved.
All right, thank you. Please go ahead and discuss your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. The 6-1 amendment brings the language from House File 1918, the Dental Homes Program, into the omnibus bill, replacing a very brief summary paragraph. And this brings in much more depth. You heard all about this back in March in hearing, and so I won't go through all the details. I'll just remind you that this is an effort to address the shortfall in care that our Medicaid children are receiving, with only 40% having received care in the most recent year. And so we are doing that by bringing more innovation and change into the program and working together in this advisory council to design a good program. There are only minor tweaks from what you heard in March. A more explicit role for the Dental Services Advisory Committee, which is a state group, in leading this work. More role for private practice dentists who are in the smaller side of serving Medicaid in an effort to understand barriers to participating, and then some fine-tuning of the goals. So essentially something we've heard before, addressed questions on before, and so I appreciate your consideration and ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Is there any discussion to the A6-1 amendment? All right. Seeing none, so Representative Ryer renews her motion for adoption of the A6-1 amendment. All those in favor, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the A6-1 is adopted. Okay, next is the A8-1. Representative Ryer, did you want to move the A8-1?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So moved.
All right. Representative Ryer, go ahead and describe the A8-1.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. The 8-1 amendment is another dental amendment, and it focuses on the reimbursement. One of the problems with Medicaid dental and public programs in general is that reimbursements are not sufficient. And they're based to data from the 1990s. So in looking at possibilities, the governor's amendment or governor's program laid out a new approach. This is an amendment to that. So rather than building up and giving a flat increase across the board to all dentists, we are including a 20% critical access dental add-on, similar to the one that we have now in the plan, reduced to reflect the size of the base, and again, simplifying the program by eliminating and folding in some other of the add-ons. It's cost neutral for the spreadsheet, and I think it's a good step as we work to bring the cost and the reimbursement into a more favorable light for providers. I appreciate any questions and ask for your support.
All right. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Is there any discussion to this amendment to the A8-1?
Oh, excuse me, Madam Chair. I should also add that there's another change in this amendment which specifies that when we are deciding who is a critical access provider, that for health systems, this needs to be tied to the specific location and not to the health system as a whole, in order to return more to the original spirit of the structure of the amendment or of the legislation. Thank you,
okay. Thank you, Representative Ryer. Okay, questions to the amendment? All right. Representative Ryer, thank you so much for working on this very important issue. We know that dental services are a real sore spot for us in this state. We have not done well under our public programs making sure that our folks get dental care. We know that it is part of healthcare. People can't be healthy if they have terrible teeth and pain. Certainly, the idea that we send children to school with bad teeth that are hurting them is just something that should never happen in this state. And yet we've really struggled to get better at this. And obviously, it's a very difficult issue. It's one where, there's a lot of, we've tried this before, with carving out the dental program, which is what is in the bill here, because there's carving it out, smoothing out the administration, but then there's the question of the rates. And I think what you've got here really helps to move us, if not totally into the sweet spot, we're getting really close to the sweet spot where we're both increasing rates for dentists across the board who serve our patients, but also recognizing that we have some providers who are doing more than their share serving our population. We certainly want to make sure that they continue, and we want to strengthen the program. And you've hit that with both of your amendments. So I so appreciate your work on this. Other comments? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of the A8-1, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the amendment is adopted. The next amendment is the A5-1. Representative Pryor, would you care to move the A5-1?
Yes, Madam Chair, so moved.
All right, thank you. Please describe your amendment.
This is a very simple amendment. It came forward, some folks at Hennepin County saw an opportunity. We know that we want to make sure that people can get to their appointments. And so one of the options is to offer bus passes to get to medical care. But then they're also aware that sometimes people are offered these passes through another service or program. And they wanted to make sure that we were not issuing duplicative passes. And so this just says if the individual that you want to, that you would be eligible to issue this bus pass to, if they've already received a bus pass and don't need it, we don't issue a second one. So it's part of kind of the program integrity to make things work in the most cost-effective way for our public dollars. So I would appreciate your support.
All right. Thank you so much, Representative Pryor. Is there discussion to the A5-1 amendment? Questions? Discussion? All right. Seeing none, all in favor of adoption of the A5-1, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails, and the A5-1 is adopted. Okay, the next amendment on my list is the A11. Representative Freiberg, would you care to move the A11?
Sure, so moved.
All right, thank you. Representative Freiberg, please go ahead and describe your amendment.
Sure, this is a new item. This came to the committee kind of late. It would allow a tribal medical cannabis program that meets certain criteria recognized by the Department of Health to basically have the same privileges that one of our existing non-tribal medical cannabis programs have. So if you look at the amendment, it says it puts in requirements that it has to be approved by the Department of Health. At this point, my understanding is that only the White Earth Band has a medical cannabis program that would meet these criteria. This amendment was developed in consultation with the Department of Health, and I'm confirmed with them that they are okay with this language, but it does say that people who have a tribal, who participate in a tribal medical cannabis program that meets these shouldn't be subject to discrimination, should be able to participate in the state medical cannabis program as well. So it seems like a good way to recognize tribal sovereignty, and I would encourage members' support. I did notice also I asked to have this jacketed as a bill. As I said, it came to us rather late, so I haven't received the jackets yet, but I did notice in today's bill introductions that Representative Hamilton has a very similar proposal that was just introduced as a bill. So it seems like it's, I haven't compared it word for word, but it looked very similar just on a quick glance. So this seems like something that there's bipartisan support for as well.
Okay, great. All right, thank you so much. And we do have a couple of people on the call who could answer questions, and I do see that there is a question from Representative Grunhagen. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, Representative Freiberg, my question is, you know, do the laws of Minnesota, as far as medical cannabis, apply to the tribal areas in the state? I guess that's the question. To what degree can they modify or change things compared to the laws that we have in the state?
Representative Freiberg.
Thank you. I would assume that that they don't because of tribal sovereignty, but I believe the White Earth tribal attorney is here as well, and he might be able to answer that question more definitively.
All right. And is that Mr. Finde?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Yeah. Mr. Yeah. Finde, please introduce yourself for the record, and then please proceed and answer the question.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Leonard Finde. I serve as the general counsel for the White Earth Nation, and I thank the committee for considering the bill or the amendment, excuse me, today. And to answer the question with regard to the state's jurisdiction within the boundaries of the reservation is that specifically within the boundaries of the reservation, it's up to the tribe to determine whether to regulate the conduct or not. And at White Earth, there was a referendum that was passed in August of 2020 to authorize medicinal cannabis regulation by the White Earth Nation. And so the White Earth Nation Reservation Business Committee has adopted a medicinal cannabis code. And so within the boundaries of the reservation, the tribe has opted to regulate that conduct. What this legislation would do is it would allow the tribe to enter into an agreement with the Minnesota Department of Health to ensure that jurisdictional issues between program participants in the White Earth program and the State of Minnesota program are seamless and work together as much as possible.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen, any follow-up?
Yeah, I have a little bit of concern that there might be a developing path to recreational marijuana, and that, you know, if you study the results in other states, also the physical results of that, I really get a hard time supporting that because of the consequences to our young people and also the people who use it on a regular basis. So I'm going to have to vote no in the short term, but I hope it doesn't go that direction. So thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And more perhaps a statement. And I just want to thank Mr. Finde for being here and to Representative Freiberg for bringing this forward. And I certainly appreciate the hard work that the tribes have done to put together a solid program for them, and appreciate that this is a good opportunity for us to recognize the sovereignty of the tribes and make sure that we have seamless laws across the book that apply equally to our tribal members as well, so that they have the same rights and privileges as other citizens who are using the medical program.
All right. Thank you, Representative
Chair,
Bonner.
I'm sorry, can I just...
Mr. Finde.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I would just like to add that the White Earth program is strictly medicinal, and that the authorized and approved medicinal cannabis code prohibits use by anybody under 21 and contains other specific prohibitions that are outlined in guidance from the Department of Justice.
All right. Thank you very much, Mr. Finde.
One thing.
Sure, Representative Freiberg, and then we'll go to Hewitt.
Sure. Just to Representative Grunhagen's point, you know, certainly the discussion about recreational cannabis is moving forward on a separate level through the legislature at this point. But this amendment is narrowly drafted to refer to the medical program. So if you look to line 1.18 of the amendment, it says that the commissioner, the first thing that has to happen is the commissioner determines that the tribal medical cannabis program meets or exceeds the standards in sections 152.22 to 152.37. And those are the medical cannabis sections. Only at that point will it be recognized. So there are, as I said, this was run by the Department of Health, the Office of Medical Cannabis, and they are okay with the language. I don't see this as being a step towards recreational cannabis in any way.
All right. Thank you, Representative Freiberg. Representative Hewitt.
And Madam Chair, thank you. And just a slight question for Mr. Finlay. Just out of curiosity, have crimes involving marijuana on the reservation went down since you guys have legalized municipal?
Mr. Finlay?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So we have not initiated our program yet. So in January of this year is when the RBC authorized the or passed the medicinal cannabis code. And so we are still in the process of drafting the regulations, which we're doing in consultation with Minnesota Department of Health, Office of Medical Cannabis, and other state and federal partners, as well as working toward putting our cultivation process in place. So that's still ongoing. So the program actually isn't effective yet.
Representative Hewitt, anything?
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair, and that I appreciate the answer, and I look forward to hearing more from you in the next when you get it implemented. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I appreciate the responses from Representative Freiberg and also the attorney from White Earth. I'll still probably vote no, just as cautionary, and I trust but verify, and we'll see what happens. Okay, if this makes it through the process. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right, thank you, Representative Grunhagen. I see Mr. Haas has his hand up. Mr. Haas, we normally aren't just taking testimony, but I'll let you go ahead. Please introduce yourself and. You are muted.
There he is. Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm Bill Haas. I represent White Earth Tribal Nation as our lobbyist. Just a comment with this legislation. Currently, if a tribal member carries their medical cannabis prescription off the reservation and they're stopped, they can be charged with possession. So what this amendment also does is duly register them with the state after consultation with the commissioner. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for that clarification, Mr. Haas. Okay. Final word, Representative Freiberg.
I appreciate the committee's consideration. I think this is an important amendment, and I would encourage members to vote yes.
All right. Thank you. Okay. Representative Freiberg renews his motion to adopt the A11 amendment. All in favor, please say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
The motion prevails and the amendment is adopted. Thank you. Okay, the next amendment is the A2. Representative Grunhagen, did you care to offer the A2 amendment?
Oh, yes, Madam Chair. Thank you for that.
All right. Please go ahead. And so the amendment is moved. And please go ahead and describe your amendment.
Okay. I was just cleaning my glasses because my wife says when I show up on camera with dirty glasses, it shows up. Okay. So sorry about that. Yes, Madam Chair, I wanted to compliment you again on putting into this omnibus bill the $10.48 reimbursement rate for independent drugstores. I just want to add some additional information for the committee on this. I also, on this amendment, asked to raise it up to $10.77, which is about 25 cents. Is it 25? Yeah, I think so. Or 27 cents more. The reason for this is that a couple of reasons. One, we've lost 30% of our independent drug stores in Minnesota. We lead the nation in that area. And the low reimbursement is a large part of that. Also, you do have PBMs that are discriminating against private health insurance or independent pharmacies in terms of reimbursement rates. I have a couple of private pharmacies left in my district, and I talked to them firsthand, and they are telling me that if things don't improve in some way, they'll be out of business in the next 3 to 5 years or less. The other thing, just to further illustrate this to the committee, you know, Target sold off all its in-store pharmacies to CVS, all right? Lunds and Byerly's closed their 13 pharmacies after being the local pharmacy of choice for hundreds of Minnesotans. Health Partners, Park Nicollet closed all outpatient pharmacies, 30 of them in the last 2 years. Fairview Health System closed several outpatient pharmacies, 5 pharmacies in last year alone. Essentia closed several outpatient pharmacies over the past 2 years, and the story goes on and on. And one of the representatives on the committee shared with me that there are three rural counties in northern Minnesota. They have one independent pharmacy left. This is a crisis, ladies and gentlemen, because I know we have mail order, but you know as well as I do that when people run out or need a prescription in short order for a critical illness, they need a local pharmacy that they could go to. And it does seem that they're being discriminated against. And I would just strongly urge the committee to adopt the $10.77 reimbursement rate. Even at that rate, according to the studies by DHS and Mercer, 50% of the independent pharmacies will still lose money. So I want to repeat that. Even if we adopt the $10.77, it's just a median reimbursement. You're still going to have, based on cost and property taxes and overhead costs and employee costs, you're still going to have 50% of the independent pharmacies in the state of Minnesota lose money. Now, a lot of this information comes from the Minnesota Retailers Association, the Minnesota Pharmaceutical Association, the Minnesota Grocers Association, and the Minnesota State Health Partners Association. They're the ones that provided me with this information along with my local independent pharmacies. But Madam Chair, I pay for this by reducing the overhead additional increase for DHS. It doesn't have to be that way, but I just chose that in the short run. We know how this works. That can be modified or changed going forward. I personally think putting overweight prescription drugs or overweight supplements be covered by insurance is the wrong direction. I think the price will go up exponentially if that's covered under there and make it more difficult for people to afford those things. But Madam Chair, I would appreciate your response on this and whether you're willing to consider the 1077 as to put it in there to negotiate with. Again, it doesn't have to be paid for with what I've got in the amendment. That can be modified, but I would appreciate your thoughts.
Okay, well, Representative Bonner has her hand up. I'm going to go to Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Gruenhagen. I really appreciate you bringing this forward. As you know, I've spoken on this issue before. There's a couple of things that I think are really beneficial that we have going for us. The one is that we do have now in statute the cost of dispensing survey that we do every 3 years that will certainly help us evaluate this on a continuing basis down the road, which is really helpful. The other is I really am appreciative of the chair and members understanding and appreciating that the 990 rate that was in the governor's budget may not be adequate. That number is really based on a broad spectrum an average of all prescriptions, not just specific to Medicaid patients. We know that the survey rate of 1077 is a little bit closer in line to Medicaid patients, which is where that number comes from. So certainly, you know, I think I'm a little uncomfortable with the way that we're doing the financing on this, Representative Grunhagen, but I certainly support the intent and the idea behind it. And I appreciate that the chair and members have been really open and thoughtful on discussion on this. And I'm hopeful that we can continue this discussion as we move towards talking about it with the Senate. I will be voting no on this for today, but I do certainly look forward to having that continued conversation on what that looks like, because we know that those pharmacies in Greater Minnesota and the small corner pharmacies often have a larger percentage of Medicaid patients, as some of those communities are tending to skew a little bit older as well. So I definitely know this is a topic that we need to continue to have a robust discussion. But thank you to Representative Grunhagen for bringing it
up. Yeah, thank you, Representative Bonner. So Representative Grunhagen, I was going to respond. I see. Did you want to respond first, or would you?
Go ahead.
Okay.
Well, I was just going to thank Representative Bonner for her comments. You notice I did not criticize the governor's proposal, but I'm not trying to do that. I'm trying to make this as bipartisan as possible, and I do appreciate Representative Bonner's concern also, and be anxious to hear what your thoughts are, Representative Chair.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Grunhagen. And so I was just going to, first of all, I think it's important for anyone listening to understand that, and Representative Bonner did explain this. You know, a couple of years ago, we had to set a rate. We picked a rate that was the rate from Indiana, I believe, and that's where the number 1048 came from. It was from a survey in Indiana. We did not have our own. Then we did one, and we came out with this 991 rate. Now, I think that was an average rate, but regardless, you know, any rate that you pick that's anytime you're picking a median, as you say, median means half is above, half is below. An average is, you know, an average across all the rates. It tends to be pulled by extremes in one direction or the other. But regardless of that, it came out with this 991, and that was in the governor's proposal, was to say, well, it doesn't cost that much in Minnesota. We're going to reduce it. In our bill, we chose not to take that savings, you know, for a number of reasons. And I do appreciate your concern about this issue, about the closing of pharmacies. And I do think this is a huge, huge issue and problem for our state, and one that we should address in a lot of ways. And I want to tell you, I think this bill actually does start to really address that, in part with the carve-out. Because you've heard the pharmacists testify again and again in support of the carve-out, because Representative Grunhagen, you're talking about how bad it is for them to work with the PBMs. Well, they're working with a PBM under every one of our managed care organizations, different ones with different rules, with different, you know, and taking a cut. And it is administratively difficult for all providers to have to deal with all of these different payers under one, what is essentially one or two public programs. So that's the first thing. We all, I think, share your concern about what's happening in this industry. And some of what you've described is this vertical integration. When we talk about CVS, CVS is a PBM in addition to a chain of pharmacies.
Yeah,
so there are serious problems here. And I think it goes way beyond what we pay for dispensing under Medicaid. And in your bill, you know, I had not costed, I wouldn't have been able to tell you the additional cost of your proposal here, but it's not huge. And it's certainly not enough to save this industry. I mean, that is for sure. So, you know, I tell you, I really am happy to work with you and keep working on this issue. I think the Senate is carrying something like this. I certainly am concerned about this. And, you know, beyond people just being able to go and get a prescription in a rural area, pharmacies are, you know, healthcare in a lot of places. They are doing the blood pressure check. effects. They're doing medication management. They are really important players to have around the state. And the fact that we, you know, we raised the rate for them to be giving the COVID vaccine, which we were able to do, and we passed that off the floor. It got signed into law. To the degree they're able to do that, they're getting paid a higher rate. So we're cognizant of these issues that they have. But, and I'll tell you, I was more with you until you went after kind of one of the things I really love in the bill, which is that coverage of the weight loss drugs, which honestly, I think is a serious public health improvement and a serious, this is not, we're not talking about people who have 20 pounds to lose. We're talking people for whom obesity is a serious health problem.
Yeah.
Anyway, that aside, I at this time, I don't feel that we can accept the amendment, but I do appreciate your work, and I'd like to keep working on the issue. Representative Grunhagen.
Oh, thank you, Matt. Thank you for that response, Chair Liebling. I appreciate your concern also. And the thing about the weight loss drugs wasn't just a suggestion. It wasn't the end all or be all, but it just, I've just seen so often where something gets covered under insurance and the next thing behind the scenes, the prices start going up. But maybe that's just the paranoia I have, having sold health insurance for over 40 years. But hey, I appreciate your response, and please continue working on this. To any degree I can be helpful on it, I certainly will. Again, I don't think the 1077 will solve the problem, just like you said, Representative or Chair Liebling. There's a lot of other problems back there, but it certainly isn't going to hurt, okay? And it could be a little bit of a lifeline to a few of these. One thing I forgot to mention in my presentation that was included from these organizations that sent me a lot of this information, there used to be three private Hmong independent pharmacies. We're now down to one, okay? So even in terms of minorities beginning to participate as entrepreneurs and businesses, it's getting difficult, if not impossible, to do that. And I'm one that like to see those types of opportunities for minorities to experience the Minnesota dream. So thank you, Chair Liebling. I hope that we can continue to look at ways to address this. Thank you.
All right,
I'll withdraw the amendment instead of forcing it.
All right, thank you. Representative Grunhagen withdraws the A2 amendment. Okay, next amendment is the A7. Representative Damuth, did you want to move the A7?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the A7 amendment.
All right, so it is moved and before the committee, and please go ahead and describe your amendment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The A7 amendment aims to address the issue of the shortage of dental health professionals, specifically in Greater Minnesota, outside of the 7-county metro area. This may seem as a familiar amendment to you, as we heard House File 620 earlier in committee. The way this would happen is in three ways. It would expand the health professional loan forgiveness program to include dentists who agree to practice in rural areas. It would create a new dental residency grant program to support current and new dental residencies outside the metro area, and it would expand the U of M's Rural Dentistry Scholars Program. By creating new solutions and building on existing ones, this amendment would help attract new dentists to rural areas. And addressing this critical shortage of providers, we will protect the overall health of the residents in Greater Minnesota. We know that the lack of dental care and oral health is important. We know that we see excessive emergency room visits, and was mentioned earlier in this committee meeting, the lack of school days, lost school days, as it affects our students. So with that, Madam Chair, I won't take any more time, but this is the A7 amendment, and I would appreciate support on it.
All right. Thank you, Representative Damuth. Is there discussion to the amendment? Discussion to the amendment. Representative Ryer, are you?
Yes. Thank you, Madam Chair. I was searching for my hand raised.
I could tell.
thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Damuth, for bringing this forward. As you know, I'm very strongly involved and concerned about the state of dental care, and really support and appreciate you bringing this forward. I think that I would like to consider it in a future year as part of our broader strategy, because we're looking at who will be giving care across the state? What will that look like? Where are the gaps? How do we want to best address that? And I think some of the tools that you have in your amendment will be really valuable, but I won't be supporting it today just because I want to look at this as a package, and I really hope that we can partner on this as we go through the interim and into next session to put our thoughts on dental care together and have an even better solution. Thank you.
Okay, other questions or comments from members? Representative Bonner.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I also want to thank Representative Damas for bringing this forward. The one thing that we often don't applaud enough is the idea of folks reaching out and looking for really innovative solutions and looking outside the box. And I think that this is a good example of doing just that. And I also understand and appreciate that with our budget targets, we can only fit so much in the box. I get it. But I do think that some of these programs have some really good promise. And like Representative Ryer, I'd like to see us have further discussion on some of these options moving forward and see if we could find a way to make them work down the road, even if we're not able to make it fit into our budget for this year. Certainly, I think they're good options and something worthy of continuing to explore. So thank you, Representative Damas, for bringing this forward.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Are there other questions or comments? All right. I don't see anybody else. So, Representative Damas, I would just say that I also appreciate the thought and the effort. I think the amendment itself is kind of not ready. And, you know, for one thing, it takes $14 million. You know, it is balanced. It does pay for itself, but unfortunately, it pays for it in a way that, you know, we just can't do in this bill. You know, there are different elements to it. And also, those could be worked on separately. They could be, you know, but I also have had some discussions or information from the health department, so on. And I think there are things in here that are not entirely workable that just still need to be. There needs to be some more work done, but I really appreciate your focus on this. I think it is, for us as a committee, obviously, it's a really, really important topic. And just like we were talking about with pharmacies, it is super important that everybody across the state, wherever they live, be able to get the care they need to stay healthy. There is no doubt about that, and I really appreciate your partnership on that. So I hope to continue to work with you. The other thing on this is I noted there's no Senate companion. I wanted to ask you about that, whether there is, because sometimes in our virtual environment, that doesn't happen as easily as we would like. And so I'm going to give you the final word, and if you could just address that as well. But I'm going to have to ask members to vote no on the amendment, because I think it just, you know, won't work in our bill today, but really do appreciate your concern. Representative Damas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. As far as the Senate companion, I have been in conversation with a couple of members of the Senate that doesn't have an author at this point, but those conversations continue. I do appreciate Representative Ryer, Representative Bonner, and your comments, Madam Chair. I believe that the dental issue access and then the oral health overall is an important topic that we need to continue to look at. And I would be happy to continue working together. With that, I will withdraw this amendment at this point in time. I won't make anybody take a vote either against it, or I definitely am still for it and hope that it could be included. I appreciate you taking the amendment as far as the conversation, letting it be presented. And I look forward to continued work. And with that, I will withdraw it, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, thank you, Representative Damas withdraws the A7. And thank you. You know, it's great to have this conversation, and I appreciate you bringing it forward to do that. So that is all we have in terms of amendments to the DE. So I'm going to then move adoption of the DE1 amendment as amended to the to House File 2128. So is there discussion? We could, I think what we'll do is vote on the amendment and then we'll discuss the bill as amended. So all in favor of adoption of the DE1 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
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 The motion prevails and the DE1 is adopted. Okay, so now we can discuss the bill as amended. So discussion to the bill as amended. Anyone who wants to discuss the bill before we take final vote? All right, let's see. All of a sudden I see a bunch of hands and I don't know if Ms. Niedernhofer has been able to catch up and see, but I think Representative Quam is first. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I am a bit disappointed that we didn't find the $250K for helping to progress pharmacogenomics or individualized medicine. I think there's great promise, and I'm hoping that when one-time funding from the feds shakes down, that there'll be sufficient extra money to fund that to set us in an appropriate position in the future so that Minnesota can help level health outcomes, help save money by getting the right med right away, and basically help some of the disparities, because not all medicines work the same for all the communities in our state. So I'm just that little plug for one-time funding. The other thing is, during the debate that we've had this year, there's been a lot of discussion about things we need to require, and it isn't always just, or it isn't across the board. It seems as if things are put on the non-public programs. Certain things that, well, we really need to have this available, but it's not included in the public programs. And it'd be nice to have a sit down and compare the public, private, and level set on a universal coverage and, settle that, because I don't think being separated like we are remotely, we don't have the depth of interaction. And the rest of the story comes out because we used to be able to walk down the hall to each other's offices and get some clarity. And we also used to chat before to prep out. And the hope is that we've had a fairly camaraderie type committee, and that we can continue to work together as this process moves to floor versus committee, and that we can maybe come up with some amendments on the floor that will make this a better bill. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you, Representative Quam. Representative Hewitt.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I want to thank you for such a great bill. Naturally, I'm a little disappointed with myself as I was not able to move us forward in EMS, but I'm hoping to come back to the committee next year with Representative Backer's help and deliver a more good bill that we can discuss. I am excited, though, that we were able to fund the CALS program, which will help all our communities around the state. That really goes into a lot of great training that happens for pre-hospital care and in ERs. And also to get some, we did okay. We got some money out to the regions, which I'm excited about too. So, Madam Chair, I think this is a great bill, and I look forward to voting for it on the floor. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hewitt. Representative Morrison.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have so much to say about this bill because there are so there are so many good things in it. It makes important investments in the health of Minnesotans across our state. Highlights for me certainly is the inclusion of the Minnesota Telehealth Act. I think as we've discussed in this committee, that telehealth has been a silver lining of the pandemic. And so the ability to continue to practice in that way, I think is going to be a boon for patients and providers. I know that my email and social media has been flooded with testimonials from patients and providers about how this has improved care. I think that it's not exactly in the form that I would have hoped for, but given the cost, we had to pare it down. And it's my hope that the study that we've included will show that the changes will help patients and providers manage chronic conditions better and therefore save healthcare dollars in the long run, as well as improve patient satisfaction by saving time and money. Certainly, extending MA to 6 months postpartum from the current 60 days, while the hope for 12 months is a major improvement for those who have recently given birth. We have unacceptable disparities in maternal and infant mortality between Black and American Indian women and their white counterparts, and between rural and urban and suburban women. Heart disease and substance use disorder are significant causes of late postpartum mortality. And they require ongoing care and management. So this legislation will save lives and help prevent the devastation that a maternal death can bring to families and entire communities. Enshrining the requirement that prescription contraceptives be covered without a copay also represents a real advance for women and people who can become pregnant. Contraception is basic preventive health care. More than 90% of women will use contraceptives over the course of their reproductive lifetimes, and this will prevent unintended pregnancies and help treat various medical conditions. The enhanced asthma benefit expands MA coverage for services and products for kids with poorly controlled asthma. This is evidence-based policy that's been around for a while, so I'm so excited that it's in the bill and really hope it becomes law. This is an equity issue that can just make a huge difference in kids and families' lives. Let's see, it's so much more. I'm almost done. House File 2113, I have to thank our Posse Caucus, community advocates, and Minnesota Doctors for Health Equity for really advocating for this bill and helping me to write it, as well as help of MDH. This is a vaccine and public health equity bill that will help us address the equity issues with regard to the COVID vaccine through directed outreach, community-assisted, and mobile vaccination programs. We know that COVID-19 has disproportionately impacted BIPOC and disability communities in Minnesota, so they deserve priority in vaccination. This bill also aims to bulk up our chronically underfunded public health infrastructure so that we're ready for future challenges. The timely provider credentialing seems like a little thing, but it will help expand access to care. And I'm grateful for MMGMA and to the health plans for working together to find peace in the valley to get this done. And I have to mention Representative Richardson's Dignity in Pregnancy and Childbirth Act. It's a really important recommendation of the House Select Committee on Racial Justice, and just critical as we look at addressing disparities in maternal and infant health. This will require anti-racism and implicit bias training in places where prenatal care is provided labor occurs. So I could go on. I think this is a very exciting bill full of great things for Minnesotans. And I thank this team, and I thank you, Madam Chair, for your leadership.
Thank you so much for your hard work on all of these things, Representative Morrison. Next we have, let me just give everybody the list. So we've got Bierman, Grunhagen, Ryer, Pryor, Bolden, and Schumacher. And Representative Schumacher, I'm gonna let you go last before I close up, if that's okay with you, since you're the lead, even though you're not last in raising your hand, if that's okay. Let me know if that's not okay. All right, thank you. Okay, so next on the list is Representative Bierman.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you very much. Thanks to the entire committee. I want to thank the chair particularly, and also Patrick McQuillan and Kristen Niedenhofer and the entire staff that we've been working with throughout at DHS, MDH. It's just an amazing workforce we have up here. And just to the chair directly, I just want to thank you since I came onto this committee in my first term. You know, you have a diligence and a work ethic, and you're a model for us in how you operate this. And you are a teacher as you go. And I think that's critically important to the newcomers on this committee. So thank you very much for that. So there is, you know, not enough time on these committees to accomplish the task before us. With the time and the dollars available, we can't do everything. And this bill has some very solid legislation. It's an excellent bill, you know, and I'm really proud to vote for it. But yeah, you can't help but have a hard time walking away from some of these good bills that we really could do and could improve health. And, you know, Representative Damuth's last bill was a good example of that. And I could countless others, but I'll just focus on a few bills that I really am proud of that are in here. The funding for tobacco cessation, the actuarial study that we will do for public option programs, and the postpartum care that Rep. Morrison mentioned. Also, the price gouging bill, extremely important bills. Also, I want to just highlight the fact that we got the pre-deductible flat copay bill in here, which is an insurance bill, but it's a bipartisan measure, and it gives access. It doesn't solve the problem of high costs of drugs, but it solves the problem for so many people in need to get those drugs when they need them, and that will result in better health outcomes. I also want to highlight the periodontal care coverage bill. That will be huge for thousands and thousands of Minnesotans for better health care. There's one bill that's not in our segment here, which is the Affordability Commission, which I just want to mention to members. This is really critical as we go forward in trying to figure out pharmaceuticals in a way that we can affect change in that. And I think that that's one that we should all keep our eyes on and work to bring forward here in the future. So we've accomplished a lot in this bill, very proud of it, but it just shows us the work we have yet to do. And you know, there's many other things we could mention, but I do want to mention other good bills like the recuperative care bill and so much that we have to do in mental health facilities for beds. And school-based health centers was kind of something that we talked about, but we need to do more work on. This road of healthcare reform it's a long one, but we focus on access, affordability, and quality. And we focus on final solutions we can continue to improve the health of Minnesotans together. So thank you again.
Thank you, Representative Bierman. Appreciate that. Representative Gernhagen.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, I'm going to have a few concerns. You probably know that, Chair, okay? Especially on government-run healthcare. I guess I'll start with the public option. Members, I've shared information. Those have been on the committee for a while before this. Go down to your local clinic. Any local clinic has to list the top 25 medical procedures that they do at their clinic and the reimbursement rate from Medicaid, Medicare, and private insurance. And you will find that Medicaid and private insurance, or Minnesota Care, one of the two, Medicaid and Minnesota Care, that they lose money on these reimbursements. And for years and decades, the private sector healthcare has bailed out the losses from government-run healthcare, okay? So that's why your premiums went up so much, because as Medicare and Medicaid expanded, hospitals and doctors cost shifted to the private health insurance to bail them out. The unfortunate thing, the condition we have, is we have Obamacare, which has basically severely damaged and crippled the private health insurance market. Just on the individual market alone, we used to have over 350,000 private health insurance plans in force in the state of Minnesota. Now we're down to between 160 and 170. What that tells you is there's no place to cost shift. So to the degree that you go with the public option, I will share with you Americans for Prosperity, just a short comment. It says, under the public option described in the bill, instead of immediately abolishing private insurance companies, the government competes with private insurance while also taxing and regulating them. It's like a referee putting a third team on the playing field. What if you, in football, you had two teams and then the referee put a third team on, and when the ball was hiked, they all went at it? What would you have? Chaos, okay? That's what you're doing. Government needs to be a referee. They don't need to put a third team on the playing field. Secondly, you can guess what will happen. It ends in a government monopoly and thus in widespread disruption, cost hikes for patients, additional burdens on state taxpayers, and most importantly, members, reduced access to care. Now, if you don't care about Americans for Prosperity, why don't you check out Vermont, which did pass a single payer, then repealed it because of the problems that Americans Prosperity brought up, or check out California. They proposed single payer. Their estimate was over $400 billion the first year to implement it. They backed away. They decided they couldn't do it because of the concerns brought up in the paragraph I just read. Also, look at the history of Medicare and Medicaid in terms of reimbursement rates and cost projections. If you read my book, anyway, I'll leave that off, although I would recommend you read my book. In 1968, Medicare cost about $5 billion. It was estimated to cost about $10 billion in 1990. You know what it actually cost? $90 to $100 billion, 10 times more than what it was projected by the experts. Members, this is what you get. Huge overhead cost, low reimbursement, and reduced access for patients. The last thing, I could go on, but I won't. I know many of you have heard me before. You know, we just got an email during this session, and it basically said that in 2019, revenues were down for the Minnesota Hospital Association. So again, we have around 30 hospitals that are on the edge of going out of business. If you go to this government reimbursement, you're only going to aggravate that. We need to reinvigorate the private market. I brought forward an amendment, the reference-based healthcare reform, as an option to get rid of pre-certification and pre-certification and networks, and to reduce premiums and deductibles dramatically. Unfortunately, it was voted down. So members, as I said to Chair Liebling in the past, we'd get along a lot better if we'd back away from this single payer healthcare scheme, which isn't going to work. Okay, I'll shorten the rest of my comments. Madam Chair, this is a question for you. Where are we at as far as that 340B pharmacy reimbursement, where some of that goes to the hospitals, especially rural? My understanding, we're taking that away from them and we're moving it over to DHS. Can you comment where that's at or if that has changed any inside the bill from its original presentation?
Yeah, Representative Grinhagen, the carve-out of pharmacy is still in the bill. In other words, that there wouldn't be all these different PBMs would not be in the picture. And the part about 340B, there's a pot of money in the bill to be distributed to make up for the loss of the additional 340B funds that a lot of these organizations have been getting through our Medicaid program without us knowing about it. So there's been, it does make the money flow a whole lot more transparent. And very importantly in the bill, there is reporting so that we can start to understand, not just have people say, oh no, you can't do this, I'll lose money, but so that we actually get information about how much money is flowing that way, and so that we can actually do make policy with information instead of just with what people tell us about, you know, their general statements about don't do this, I'll lose money and I'll go out of business. You know, it's very hard for us to evaluate those kinds of statements. And so we have, you know, the carve out is in there. There is money to keep these, we hope, as much as we and DHS can figure it out, to keep these organizations whole, because they are important to us. We don't want to, we're not looking to sink any organizations that serve low-income people in the state. But we do think that obviously there's huge growth in costs in the program, in the pharmaceutical program under the managed care organizations, much more so than under the fee-for-service. And so the idea is that as good stewards of the public's money, that we need to make sure that we get the PBMs out and that we as policymakers start figuring out where the money is going. Because as I always say, our constituents believe that we are in charge of this money. They believe that when we're spending billions of dollars on public healthcare programs, that we, the legislators, are actually in charge of that. And the reality is we're not, and we don't even know where the money's going. So we're trying to, this is an approach to that, and I hope that it will have your support.
Oh, thank you, Madam Chair. Yeah, you know, I share some of the concerns that you just stated, Representative Liebling. And I just don't know if turning DHS into a PBM is the right way to go. I have input from my county-based purchasing and also other areas that this isn't going to work out so well. The hospitals are already, like we mentioned, hurting financially. And to make this type of a change, I do think there needs to be some change with the PBMs and stuff. I just don't, I have caution about turning DHS into a PBM. It just, it doesn't set with me very well. Again, it goes back to the three teams on the football field. We need to referee, but we, and I share your concern about the reimbursement rates and us not knowing. I've worked on that myself. The other area I'll just comment, you know, is the formulary drug and not allowing PBMs in this case to make changes. You know, I listened to their testimony and I listened to Mr. Renner's testimony, who was in favor of this. And I agreed with both sides, because I've, with me selling my health insurance, I've had people come in here. I sell a lot of Medicare supplements and Part D drug plans. And they come in here and they say, yeah, I was taking this drug and it was working just fine. And all of a sudden it got switched and this doesn't work as well. And I've had to go back to the doctor or even the emergency room because of it. So, you know, there's such a focus either on rebates or lower cost that the patient becomes secondary or third in this process, okay? And I just don't think, I have concerns that the moving this to DHS to become a PBM is the right direction. I have concerns that we're only gonna complicate the situation and actually lead to shortages for some of our seniors on their prescription drugs. I also have a concern about the durable medical equipment reduction. We had testimony on that. And the last thing I'll say, it's never the last thing, but I will make this the last thing, okay? And Chair Liebling, I know you know, we've been together since the beginning, I think, since I was elected. And you were elected before I was. And we've bumped heads on a number of things, especially Obamacare. You know, I know you care a lot, okay? You wouldn't put all the time and effort in that you do if you didn't. It just, I just disagree with some of the direction of more government in some of these areas. But the other thing I wanted to say, you know, the disparities issue among our low-income people. I really believe that regardless of ethnic background, okay, and again, we're one race, the human race. That's what biology teaches us. We're not different races. We're one race, the human race. We're different ethnic groups. I agree with that, okay? But as far as the disparities, when a hospital or doctor are losing money on every deal, okay, and they're trying to make it up in volume, you're not going to get the care that somebody walks in with private health insurance or they pay for themselves where the hospital actually comes out financially. I mean, you say, well, they shouldn't really take that into consideration. I'm sorry, but human nature is human nature, and they want to keep their facility going. And I think that's a major cause of some of the disparities we're seeing. And expanding government low reimbursement health care is not going to make it better. We need to reinvigorate the private market so it can help carry the government health care with the lower reimbursements. With that, Madam Chair, I'm going to have to vote no on this bill, but I'll leave it at that. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Representative Grunhagen. Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I want to start by saying what a real pleasure this whole committee experience has been coming in my first term and working with such a dedicated group of legislators, of staff who blow me away every day with your knowledge and talent and dedication. And I just feel so lucky to be here. One of the main reasons I ran was to focus on equity and to focus on ways that we can address disparities in our state amongst groups of people, looking at the systematic differences that we see in outcome for people, very clearly attributable to structural racism in our society. These disparities are not economic driven. People of color have worse outcomes, whether they have private health insurance or they're on Medicaid. It's simply irrelevant. And so I look at the work that we've done with incredible pride, because I think we've done so many things that take that into account, that we raise the boat for everyone, so to speak, but we're doing it with a lens and with intentionality around also remedying longstanding wrongs. Some things I'd point to, being able to dig deeply into the area of dental has been a real pleasure. Being able to start to understand the root causes and the systemic issues, and I'm looking forward to continuing that work. But I'd also look at some of the policy things, for example, allowing the dried cannabis sale, which is a for medical cannabis program, is certainly a benefit to all. But also it's been a source for people who are lower income, not making the medical marijuana, medical cannabis program accessible. So I think that's really important work that we're doing. The work that Ruth Richardson, Representative Richardson, has brought forward, the dignity in pregnancy and childbirth, along with the programs related to telemedicine and using the situation of COVID to say, what can we learn? How can we innovate our whole system? We learned some things out of emergency, and how can we use those as better ways to proceed using technology and using the infrastructure that we have available in new and different ways? So I'll close there. I just want to, again, express my gratitude to everyone and to the public, and certainly to my constituents for allowing me to serve here. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. Representative, so I've got on the list now, I've got Pryor, Bolden, Backer, and then Schumacher. So Representative Pryor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I want to thank also Representative Ryer, who just preceded me, for the comments that she made. And I just want to keep building on those, too. I may have had two terms before I joined this committee, but this is the first time I've been on the health committee, and it really has been a rewarding experience. And I want to say too that it's been very rewarding because how it builds on the other committees that I'm on. I'm on preventive health, which reports as a division of this committee, and I'm also on early childhood. And so what I really want to highlight is the work that we did in this committee that builds on what we know is being important that we've learned in the early childhood committee. And I'm also thinking of a question that Representative Grunhagen asked in the committee at one point, which is, you know, where's the evidence that any of these programs that we have really make a difference for people in poverty? And what we heard is the evidence from our early childhood committee is that when children have a good, solid, nurturing, healthy start in life, they do better as adults. And children that don't have that start, that maybe don't have the stable parenting or the childcare, the nurturing childcare, if they don't have those tools that they need, that experience that they need in their earliest years and in their earliest months, and even before they're born, that you see that correlation between where they were as an infant and where they end up as an adult. And that's what generational poverty is. And so as we shortchange our youngest among us, we see generations after that, the outcomes. So I want to highlight some of the excellent, excellent work that we have in this bill that really recognizes the new mothers and the newborns that are affected by what happens to those mothers. So we have like the Representative Dr. Morrison's postpartum coverage extension. We have the ICHRP, expanding integrated care for high-risk pregnancies. We have the African American Babies Coalition's grant. We have the Dignity in Pregnancy and Childbirth Act. And if you think about it, if you're someone giving birth that is not getting the quality of care that other people are because of systematic racism, you lose the mother. You've also hurt the child for the next generation. So we're talking about two generations that are benefited by these programs. And, you know, again, the home visiting program from Representative Bonner. And that's one thing that was clear in the Early Childhood Committee. These home visiting programs, they are documented to really improve the future and the opportunities that those children benefit from, the parents and the children benefit from. So we do have the evidence that these are the programs that work. They change generational poverty and really make a difference. So it's great to see the actual bills that these programs that I've heard in the other committees is going to make it to the floor and glad to be a part of that. And I also have to mention, just because it's just something I'm really passionate about and care about, I love the telehealth provisions, and I hope we keep working and expanding on it, because I really think that's just patient-centered healthcare is when we are willing to open it up and understand there's lots of different ways to get healthcare, and it's good to meet the patient, meet the person seeking healthcare where they are and the way that works best for them. And then finally, the tobacco prevention and cessation. I know that it's in the tax bill, and I just want to make sure that everybody knows that we support it and we're glad to see it in the tax bill, because I think that's also going to make a huge benefit for public health now and into the future. So it's a great bill, and I'm very happy to support it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Representative Pryor. Representative Bolden.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I will be brief. I just wanted to echo a few things that other members had said. One is gratitude. This being my first term as well, I will really just echo what Representative Ryer said. This has been a really wonderful experience, and I'm so grateful to be able to learn from such dedicated and knowledgeable and experienced legislators. And a special thanks to you, Madam Chair, for really your leadership in the committee and helping us to learn as we go and do this really important work. I am very excited about this bill. I am proud of the work that this committee has done. You know, I think a budget is a moral document, and I think this bill does is a good example and really view of where our priorities are and shows our values that, you know, everyone across Minnesota deserves to be able to get care to keep themselves and their families well and healthy, regardless of race or place or income. We all deserve that. And I think this bill has so many things within it, so many pieces that we have touched on, and I won't get into the details, but I think this bill gets us closer to that, and it works on those racial disparities and, you know, the impacts of economic disparities. And I think this absolutely moves us in the right direction, and I am very excited to support it moving forward. So thank you.
All right. Thank you so much, Representative Bolden. Representative Backer.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. A couple of things that I have concern in this bill, and I do agree. I know a lot of people put a lot of effort into for this bill, and it's hard to put together a bill that we'll all hug on and agree on. But I am concerned. I represent six critical access hospitals, excuse me. So I have always served on this committee because of my care for EMS and my care for our hospitals in greater Minnesota. And taking away the funding in the 340B concerns me. I'm concerned about the public option payment for hospitals. I know the hospitals that I represent, which is six of them, the challenge is they are running on thin margins. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to know that if you're only getting paid 40 to 50 cents on a dollar at best, and you're running on margins of 1%, 2%, or 3%, it really puts those critical access hospitals in a more vulnerable situation. So I'm concerned about that. I am concerned about the independent pharmacy situation. I'm just concerned. My daughter is graduating this year as a pharmacist, and I wasn't even talking to her about this. And we were talking about something else last weekend when she came home for Easter, and she goes, you know what? She's looking at Minnesota and North Dakota because she's going to graduate this May, and she goes, Dad, it is nearly impossible for independent pharmacies to make it in Minnesota. I go, why did you say that? I did not even prompt her on that and so forth. And that was the thing that came out of her mouth. Independent pharmacies are so important in smaller communities. We lost ours here in Browns Valley last year. COVID put the last final nail in the coffin. Now we have to drive into South Dakota or to Graysville. So we're talking about 20, 25 miles myself. I can do that. But I, as an EMS person, haul individuals who don't have that. You know, they don't have elderly individuals who don't have that freedom. And Rainbow Rider out in our neck of the woods, they're not going to take someone to a pharmacy. So that concerns me. And then finally, I'm quite concerned about the broker idea for medical non-emergency transport. I get it. On paper, it looks like a savings. But as a EMS volunteer EMT now for 25 years, and you can talk to any paramedic or us EMS personnel and first responders, there are times that we get that page and we are a taxi service. Extremely frustrating. And I'm concerned with how the broker will do this. It's a concern I'm expressing that us professionals who are trained for life support will be handling, especially in the metro area, maybe not as much as greater Minnesota, will be doing more of the taxi service. Boy, I hope I'm wrong. I really am. Taking that away from DHS and giving it to a broker concerns me. So with that, that's just three concerns that I have. I do appreciate everybody's time on some of my concerns, and I do appreciate how you have ran the committee chair, and thank you for your time, members.
Thank you very much, Representative Backer. Representative Bonner.
Thank you, and I'll try to be super brief on this. My colleagues have already done a great job of covering some of the really high points in the bill, so I won't cover those again. And certainly, of course, we know with a budget, we have to. There's many things that fall by the wayside, including the pharmacogenetics, which I think is a great opportunity for our state. But I do want to focus one really quick thing that I didn't hear today. And that is this, you know, many of you know in my work outside the legislature, I'm a team leader. And I wanted to just say a brief moment of gratitude to the members of this committee. You know, one of the things that I'm always struck by on both the Health and the Human Services committees is that the quality of the members on this committee are really tremendous. And I find that we often are able to find a great deal of common ground in working across the aisle on these particular committees, because we are so committed to the health and well-being of our citizens. And we've heard some really innovative ideas from some of our minority members this year that have really great promise, and I'm really grateful for that. And I've also seen a lot of collaboration between minority and majority members in really working through those ideas. And while we may have disagreements on different policy areas, this is one area where I am really grateful that we are so closely aligned and so willing to work together. And I know that isn't always the case, but I just wanted to not let that moment pass and thank everyone here for that. I know we heard some great ideas from Representative Keel and Representative Demuth, Representative Quam, and among others, but just to thank you again for all of your hard work and effort, and hopefully we can keep moving that all forward. Thanks so much for your work.
All right. Thank you, Representative Bonner. Representative Schultz.
Thank you, Chair Liebling. I just want to add also my thanks for your leadership on this committee and for the work of all of our members on this committee. I want to just point out a couple things that I'm not sure were mentioned yet, but the investments we're making in the public health infrastructure of over $20 million for local public health agencies, for grants, for health equity, really want to highlight that important work and the appropriations we're putting forward to do that work. I also want to thank the chair for including the biosimilar bill, the study on the public options and healthcare reform in general. And I'm not going to respond to Representative Grudenhagen, but I just want to say the government is involved in MinnesotaCare by subsidizing MinnesotaCare, but it's offered by private health plans, and they negotiate reimbursement rates directly with providers, and they bid to provide that coverage in MinnesotaCare. So there's a lot of myths out there about how the government is involved and whether it's actually delivering health care is a misnomer. We're relying on private providers and private health plans to deliver most of our public programs. And I think we need to have an in-depth conversation about how that is working. And I'm grateful that we're funding the study to evaluate how we're delivering health care in Minnesota and how we can improve that delivery, increase access, and reduce the cost of coverage and the cost of healthcare in the future for the people of our state. I know that there's a lot more work to do. I think that it was really unfortunate that we could not bring forward and have an agreement with the Senate to cover undocumented non-citizens. This needs to be a priority. I hope we can continue to work this year on figuring that out with partnerships with the federal government, and implement coverage and also increase coverage for COVID treatment and using emergency medical assistance for undocumented non-citizens. But again, thank you for your contribution. I also want to thank the staff in Health and Human Services for all the work they've done this year, both our committee staff and nonpartisan staff. Appreciate all of their work and dedication, and they've been working nonstop to put together our omnibus bills and our budgets. And hopefully they'll get to rest soon. So thanks again, Chair Liebling.
All right. Thank you, Representative Schultz. And I see that Representative Grunhagen's hand went up. Representative Grunhagen, I don't want to go back and debate the same stuff again. I think we're just going to, you've had quite a bit of time. I'm going to go on and let Representative Schumacher close up for the, sorry?
Well, I just had a quick question on undocumented. If an undocumented goes to an emergency room, don't they get coverage?
Well, I don't know who that's directed to, Representative Grunhagen, but members are just making their closing statements now. So I'm going to let that one go and get answered offline. And if that's okay, I'm going to go to Representative Schumacher, who's been waiting very patiently. Representative Schumacher.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, committee members, for the bill that we have in front of us and for the discussion that we've had today. Madam Chair, what I've always liked about you is that you can always tell the types of bills that you've been working on. Your fingerprints are all over those, and I don't agree with most of what's in those bills. It's always nice to see when someone actually is making an impact from their own beliefs on there. And so I do appreciate that. And we're at this point in session. This is where the bill should be. You're the chair. And so you want to create it in the best form that you can do what your ideal would be for this year, given what you have. I also need to congratulate you for getting a positive budget target. I think that's maybe twice that I've seen that in my time here. And so I'm sure that didn't come easy. You had to probably scratch and gnaw for that, but still got it done. So congratulations on that. But unfortunately today I will be voting no and am encouraging other members to vote no as well. Just a few of the highlights today that just remain concerns for me as we move forward with this. First off for us, we talked about the positive budget target. We have the surplus, but we're still trying to capture savings in some areas. And one piece that concerns me is the durable medical equipment and what we're doing to capture savings there. What impact that's going to have to our disabled and medically complex kids. Basically, the savings that we're capturing there are being paid for by those disabled and medically complex kids. And I understand, because I was on the Blue Ribbon Commission, what the objective for that is to try and save money through having more of a bulk purchase system, but it's difficult to be able to buy those pieces of equipment that are intended for adults and try to fit them to growing children. And so I think that's why we see these changes in price and the types of equipment that are used for these kids, and really would like to see those savings not be captured in this bill, at least that way. Next is just the uncertainty that comes around the impact to hospitals. It's been mentioned a couple of times, the 340B and the pharmacy carve-outs here. You know, I've talked to my local hospitals a couple of times about this, and they really have trouble telling me or figuring out what the real impact will be with that. And I understand you're making an effort to try and have more transparency with where that money is going, and I can appreciate that. But I think that when it's even difficult for our local hospitals to know where that's at, when they're running on 1-3% profit margins or operating margins every year for what they're doing, and we can risk half of that money being pulled out because of the federal match there, I still just have some concerns. And I understand you're trying to backfill that so that the systems themselves are held harmless. But until I can understand more from especially my local hospitals on what impact that will be, I have some opposition to that. And that kind of ties into the last piece of concerns that I have today, and that's part of the carve-outs with the managed care benefits and some of the other things with the 340B, but also with dental and the NEMT. I mean, there's the ideological argument, of course, about private sector doing the work versus the government doing the work, but that's not really where the concern lies on here. It really, for me, comes down to this effort to save money based on this comes at a cost, and I think that cost really comes down to how we provide coordinated care for consumers. If someone has to buy their medical and surgical coverage from the private market, but then they're carved out for other programs here and there, trying to keep that straight for the consumer is going to be challenging enough, but then not having that coordinated piece. I know that's been talked about in committee. I'm just not assured well enough, I guess, at this point that that coordination is still going to be there when we have hundreds of thousands of consumers now being run through a state program as well as private programs there. And so I'm concerned that some of the money savings that are in here could happen in the short run, like they are for the durable medical equipment, but I'm concerned at what kind of long-term costs that will be. And then, of course, at the same time that this bill raises some of the requirements and mandates for private health insurance, we exclude the state programs from doing that. And so we start to hold ourselves at a lower standard overall as a state for insurance than what we do the private coverages. And so I do have concerns with that. But before I conclude, I did want to mention, Madam Chair, two provisions that I am very grateful that you are pursuing this year, and they've been mentioned before too, but the work on telehealth and the dental. I think everyone can kind of agree that out of anything that happens this year, telehealth and dental are going to be two of the things that will for sure see some dramatic changes to that. And so I just hope it's something that you can continue to work on. I know that these aren't in the place that you would want them to be. And so I just want to encourage you to keep on with that. I know that sometimes getting stakeholders together is difficult. I know that sometimes stakeholders will even try to complicate the issue so much that you kind of get hypnotized by the complexity and just try to pass it on to another year. And I don't think this is the year for that. I think there's enough appetite amongst members. I think there's enough appetite with the governor's office and with the public in general that these are things that should be huge wins for all of us at the end of the day, at the end of the year. And so I really encourage you to keep working on those. And while I won't be supporting the bill today, I wish you the best of luck moving forward. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Representative Schumacher. And thanks, members, for all your good comments. I was taking notes, and I wanted to go back and just respond to a few specific things before I kind of give my little run through of the bill. I just, members have talked about a lot of the great things in the bill, and I'm certainly not going to repeat those things. But, you know, just kind of going back to some of the discussion with Representative Grunhagen, you know, we have to remember that Medicaid, what we call medical assistance in Minnesota and our Minnesota Care Program, these are public programs. So a lot of times it seems like in this discussion about, we forget these are public programs. This is all one. These are two programs, essentially, but one, of course, much bigger than the other. But this is a public program paid for by the public. And yet the way we run the programs right now, we run them in large part through private entities. And then when we try to take back some of that from the public private entities, because frankly, it isn't working so well, and we as policymakers don't know what we're doing because they won't tell us, then we hear, you're trying to let the government do things. Well, this is a government program. I just, have to repeat that all the time for folks. So much has been said here. I think I would just, one thing I do want to note that some of the minority members have mentioned, you know, in this bill, we have some studies. We have a study of public option. And we have, there was another one here. We had, the study of public option. And then we have, with the pharmacy carve-out, we have a study of whether that could be extended to private companies, okay? It never ceases to amaze me that, and especially in the testimony we heard on the bill, that the testifiers confuse studying something with actually doing it. And I don't understand why we can't study it. You know, that's what we're doing in this bill. I would prefer if we were moving forward. But why should anyone be afraid of studying? looking at a public option. Some of the parade of horribles that members bring up about a public option, let's look at it. Let's find out. That's all this bill is doing. No one should be afraid of getting information. And the same thing is certainly true of one of the last things that Representative Schumacher mentioned, I think he was referring to the bringing private entities in to help them take advantage of the state's buying power with pharmaceuticals. All we're doing is saying, let's look at that and see if it's feasible. Maybe it isn't feasible. I don't know. But if we never look at it, we won't know. I just want to respond because in this bill, we do have a number of carve-outs. We're sort of staying on the same topic here. Our public programs, we're trying to look at, you know, we run 75% of our program enrollees are under managed care of one kind or another. And this issue about coordination of care, which has been brought up by the plans a lot, as a way to say, don't do this. Don't take away from us the pharmaceutical piece. Don't take away from us the transportation piece. Don't take away from us the dental piece. One would think from listening to them that they are actually coordinating care. I really don't see them coordinating care. And there's another piece in this bill that you all heard that kind of goes to that point, and that is the piece we're doing about the teen and child checkups, where we learned this year that besides paying the MCOs, the managed care organizations, to pay for their service, we have to pay somebody else to go out and get the clients and tell them that they can come in and get the service. If you're managing care, why aren't you managing that? Why are we having to hire somebody else to come in and tell them that they have a right to be getting care? It just makes no sense. So, you know, this idea that we're going to take away their ability to coordinate care, please show me how you're doing that, because I've never seen that. Now, I'm not saying there aren't some little instances of it. Sure, there are. But on the whole, we are paying for what seems to be managing money, not managing care. And that is not good enough, because our kids are not getting their dental care. They're not getting their checkups. People are not getting what they need under the system, even though we're paying for care. So that is a lot of the direction this bill is going. I want to just have my list here, and a lot of you have really talked a lot about the great things that are in this bill. I'm extremely proud of this bill and the work that all the members have done to get us to this point. This is a large bill. It has a lot of things in it, and that's always true of omnibus bills, especially in the health and human services area. As was mentioned, there's a lot in this bill that's to try to make our health system and try to improve health equity in our state. And it's been mentioned what this bill does for moms and babies, and to try to get at the racial impacts that are giving us terrible disparities, and try to get kids off to the best possible start. And I also do want to mention along that line that we are in this bill fixing the family foster background studies to align with adoption studies, which sounds very technical, but for the public who may be watching, this is to remove barriers that have kept people from being able to be foster families for their own kin often. So this is really important. It traumatizes children to be taken from their home, even a bad home. And trauma is something that stays with children for a lifetime. So to the degree that we can minimize that, when it's really necessary to remove a child, to put that child in a home with their own kin. And those of us who are grandmas and grandpas and aunts and uncles, I'm sure you can think about that, what that would mean for your own family if you were able to take care of your own relative in a circumstance where their parents could not. So that's a very important provision that is in this bill. And that is a Hollins provision. Representative Hollins and Representative Moran has worked extensively on that. We've talked a lot about the additional coverages in this bill under medical assistance, which are very important to the goal of health equity and just to simply improve actual health for people who are on our public programs. And the one I would like to address just briefly, it was mentioned, but hasn't really been talked about by anybody else, and that is the weight loss drugs. It is absolutely absurd that medical assistance does not cover these drugs. It just carves them out right now. And yeah, I think that there weren't always really good drugs for obesity, and now there are much better drugs. And we heard, this is Representative Bernardi's provision. We heard this bill, we heard brief but very compelling testimony from a medical expert who works with obese kids at the University of Minnesota. They have a special clinic, and I think all of you got communications from them about the importance of this provision. This is also an equity provision. But my goodness, when you have a teenager who's suffering from obesity, and this is a disease, and it impacts so many other things, and they have these tools available, these drugs that are pretty darn good, and we have to say, no, I'm sorry, you're on medical assistance, you can't get this treatment, that's really not acceptable in our state. So I am very excited about this provision and really happy to have it in the bill. We've talked a lot about the carve-outs. I'm not going to say more about those, except there is a provision in here that I am very partial to. It's my provision that increases reporting of what is being paid. What are we paying for the services under the MCOs? We don't know that. And we've, many of us on both sides of the aisle have talked about this. You know, we can say, oh, our public programs pay less. We just found out yesterday in the testimony, one of the community healthcare providers said they looked at their records. Guess what? They found out that fee-for-service pays more than the MCOs. That's kind of shocking because we're always told the opposite, right? But the bottom line is we don't know what they are paying. We're paying them, and then they say, sorry, we can't tell you. We're not telling you what we pay a provider. And the dentist told us, and this was in a letter that we got from Dr. Helgeson, who also testified yesterday, the dentists don't even know what they're being paid. So this is an unacceptable situation that we must remedy. And there's a provision in this bill to start to get some reporting, at least on an aggregate level of what these entities are paying as opposed to fee for service. And we might, I don't know what we're going to find out, but it's past time for us to find out. We've got a lot of provisions in this bill around prescription drugs. In fact, we have a whole article on prescription drugs. This continues to be a serious concern for Minnesota consumers and people who are not on our public programs, but who are struggling to afford the cost of drugs. And we have a number of provisions in here that go to that issue. Some of them have been discussed. One that I think is very important is the prohibiting prescription price gouging, which is Representative Stevenson's bill is in here. And I think that's very important because we need to be sending a signal that we're going to protect our Minnesota consumers. And we're not going to just leave you on your own when the prices of essential drugs are being raised to unacceptable levels for no reason other than greed. So this is a really important element of this bill. We've got, of course, telehealth. And I want to just say another word about that. It's been very well discussed by the members so far. This is really an important opportunity. I do want to say that we do have the sunset in there, which I understand the Senate has that too. And it is not our intention to make this go away in 2 years. The reason that we have a sunset there, which I know some people are happy that there's a sunset, others would really like there to be no sunset. There is a sunset because a couple of reasons. One is because this is, in fact, a very expensive provision. And so the sunset is and the study are timed to give the legislature an opportunity to understand this better and examine it again before we reauthorize it. And the idea is that we would examine it and make changes, any changes that are necessary, as they say, with a scalpel rather than a hatchet. So we know that telehealth, we know that, for example, phone-only visits can be very helpful in a lot of circumstances. Do we know that they're going to be helpful or cost-effective in every circumstance? No. Where is it good to use the video conferencing part of telehealth as opposed to a face-to-face in-person visit? You know, how much of this should we allow? How much of that should we allow? Are there places we shouldn't allow it? The bottom line is we don't know. We know that there's a lot of good here. We also know it's very expensive. And as policymakers, we want to make sure that we spend our money, which will always be limited, always. We want to spend it to get the most good for the people that we're trying to serve. So this is simply an attempt to have us come back, examine this more closely with more data, and then make another decision. So that's why there's a sunset in the bill. I just want to make that very clear. We are not saying that in 2 years, it goes away. I don't think there's a single legislator who is taking that position. So I just wanted to make that very clear. And finally, the piece that I also think is very important, and Representative Schultz touched on this too, we have learned a lot during the pandemic. And one of the things that we've learned is the importance of having a robust, ongoing public health infrastructure in our state. And our public health system's been underfunded for many years. And it's understandable why, because public health is the thing that when it's working well, everybody thinks it's just the way things are. And we know that that really isn't true. It's hard to put money toward things that are just kind of in the background functioning and going along. But right now we all understand how important public health infrastructure is to everything, including our economy. We have learned that so very well during this past year. And so in this bill, we are putting some money toward local public health, toward equity. This is something Representative Morrison talked about. But just to try to build out and try to support our basic public health infrastructure so that when the next pandemic or the next public health emergency happens, and it will, this happens, that our public health system will be better prepared to respond. And honestly, I wish we had more money to put toward that. And I know that we are going to have these federal dollars coming in, and we in this committee today don't exactly know yet what that's going to be, how we'd be able to use that. But I certainly hope that we will take the opportunity when public health is so high on the priority to really build that and keep it going so that we're just better protected in this state, and the citizens of Minnesota can go about their business confident that this is, you know, that people are keeping tabs and that the systems are there in place should they be needed. With that, members, I, of course, am grateful to all of you for your extremely hard work this session. And there are many, many great provisions in this bill, and I have so appreciated, as some of you said, the really wonderful, hardworking, attentive members on this committee on both sides of the aisle. You have just been a fantastic team, and while we don't agree on everything, I think sometimes the disagreement is where we get better, honestly. And so I really do value all of your input. And so I'm going to say the final thank yous after we vote on the bill, but I just wanted to put that out there because I am extremely proud of this bill. I'm very proud to be carrying it. And, I hope that those of you who are voting no today, I hope that you do that with some sense of regret, because there are so many good things in this bill. And we all know when you vote on an omnibus bill, there are always things you like and things you don't like. And, you know, I think for the DFLers, I would say this is anything in here that people might be a bit concerned about is far, far outweighed by all the wonderful things in the bill. So with that, I'm going to move again that House file 2128 as amended be re-referred to the Committee on Ways and Means. And with that, Ms. Niedernhofer, if you're still paying attention after all that, I'm sure you are, please take the roll on the bill.
Chair Liebling.
Aye.
Vice Chair Hewitt.
Aye.
Leach Schumacher.
Schumacher, no.
Representative Ackland.
No.
Representative Backer.
Backer votes no.
Representative Bonner.
Bonner votes aye.
Representative Bierman.
Aye.
Representative Bolden.
Aye.
Representative Damath.
Damath, no.
Representative Freiberg.
Yes.
Representative Grunhagen.
Grunhagen, no.
Representative Keel.
Keel, no.
Representative Morrison.
Morrison, aye.
Representative Munson.
No.
Representative Pryor.
Pryor, aye.
Representative Quam.
No.
Representative Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Representative Schultz.
Aye.
Representative Wolgamott.
Wolgamott, aye.
11 ayes and 8 nays.
Thank you. There being 11 ayes and 8 nays, the bill is passed and on its way to the Committee on Ways and Means. So thank you. So before we end today, members, I again thank you for all your hard work this session. And as you know, as all the members know, and I hope the public appreciates, we at the House are so blessed to have such incredible public servants working for us. And first of all, our House research staff, who every member goes to for amendments, they draft the bills, they give us the summaries, they give us advice. And this year they put together the omnibus bill, which the reviser usually does. So it's been an incredible year. They are not done. This is only one step along the way, but moving the bill out of committee is kind of a big moment. So I just really want to thank our House research staff, Elizabeth Clark-Fist, Sarah Sunderman, Randy Chun, and Danielle Pugnelli. And Doug Berg, our fiscal analyst, who's been working so hard on covering both our committee and the Human Services Committee. And he is just a treasure for us here at the House. Our partisan researchers, Joe Durheim and Jeremiah Wingstead, and they have, I'm sure, worked their tails off this session. And we really appreciate it. They help all of us be better legislators. Krista Niedernhofer, our committee legislative assistant. Thank you so much, Krista, for everything. I don't get to see you very much nowadays, but I know you're working hard, and thank you. And, of course, Patrick McQuillan, who's our committee administrator here, who this has been, our committee administrator always works very, very hard, and doing this with the virtual environment has just made it that much more challenging. So thank you, Patrick, for all of your work. Now, I just realized that I didn't say the magic words in my motion. And the magic words, I think, we might need to, I'll tell you what, let me make a, I don't even know if this is legitimate, but let me make a just move that we add to our motion that the staff be permitted to make any necessary technical corrections. I'm not sure if I've got the magic formula correct. Mr. Chun or one of the other House research staff, do I have the right language there, and can we do this? We'll just take a voice vote on my motion.
Madam Chair and members, I think the motion would be something like instruct staff to make all technical corrections and to make all changes necessary to conform the bill and its language to the spreadsheet.
Okay, that is my motion. And so I'm just going to do that. Is it okay, Mr. Chun, if I just make a motion to do that with House File 2128 as amended?
I think it's correct, and I think the intent is clear to them.
Okay. All right. So that's my motion. So let's just take a voice vote on that motion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
Okay. All right. Thank you, members. Thank you. Okay. So I think we got the magic words in there, and our staff, as always, are looking and reviewing and checking. And when we've all gone home and are taking a nap, they are working to make sure that everything lines up and is correct, and absolutely happy to give them permission to do so. Thank you so much, Mr. Chun. Thank you for all your work. All right. So I think then we are done for now. So just to remind members, in Ways and Means, our bill will be linked up with the Human Services bill, also with the Early Childhood bill. So when you next see these bills on the floor, they will all be in one bill with one budget. And just want to express my appreciation, too, to the minority for allowing us to, let the staff work with this and do one appropriation article and two spreadsheets. And that was so helpful in this really odd time when we're doing everything virtually. And I think that was a big assistance to them. We will probably be back together for various things. This probably is not actually our last hearing. We don't have anything planned right now, but we may have informational hearings. But I really do thank you for the great honor of being able to be your chair. I have just loved working with every one of you, and hope that you'll continue your work in Health and Human Services. And with that, members, we are adjourned.